four. Looks like, why don't we do a quick roll call, go through, start with me. I'm John Spencer. I'm somehow chairing this thing. Felix, you want to holler hi?
Hi, this is Felix. I'm here.
Gordon.
Hello.
Jessica.
Hello.
Jim.
Hello, I'm here.
Don.
Present and accounted for.
Meeting guest. Who is our meeting guest?
And Teresa.
That was Gordon.
That's me.
Oh, okay. You guys are the same people. All right. And
Teresa.
Hello.
All right. No other. So, how about meeting minutes? Has anybody read the minutes and want to approve them?
I have not received the meeting minutes for last meeting.
Okay. All right. So, meeting minutes will have to wait till the next meeting. Public comments. Do we have any public comments?
Mr. Thomas.
That's your opportunity.
All right. You have 3 minutes and then we will go from there.
Then we'll just log you off after 3 minutes.
Cut me off.
I do have your Word document here if you want me to share that on the screen at some point.
Yeah, if you want to. It's obviously nothing special. I'm here mostly to get the conversation going as an advocate for pickleball. It's I don't know if you saw this, and I sent an email out. I don't know if anybody's able to read that, but it's going to be our state sport in Washington now. They're going to make that official that was started. And do we have any pickleball players in the group? I'm curious.
Not yet.
I took a lesson. That's it.
Took a lesson. So right now I live just off 162nd and just south of 18th. And I got to drive to either Hathaway in Washougal or I drive out to Lincoln Elementary School. It's about sixes for me, about 20, 25 minutes to each. And so obviously I have a vested interest because I like pickleball first off, but I've never seen a sport, and I played all sorts of sports growing up, but I've never seen a sport that crosses generations and invites so many people to be part of a community. If you were to go to Hathaway Park on a Saturday or any nice evening, you will have 30 to 50 people there. And they will be as young as 12 and as old as 90. And I don't exaggerate. And I have been beaten by plenty of people in their 80s. you know, because, and they love the sport. So I've been talking to my group that I try to play with, and just getting ideas of where this could possibly happen. And we're open to anything in the East Vancouver area, but one area we identified was Pacific Community Park. There's a lot of green space there. And I don't know if you have that, Rocky, what I said.
Yeah, just 1 second. I'll make it share my screen.
And basically, this is nothing fancy. This is just me with Google Maps, right? But those two areas, just south of the skate park where he's got his cursor there, you can actually fit about 8 courts there. That would be fantastic, but you know, obviously costs and different things come into play. Or there's the other grassy area over there. I threw it over there as well, just as options. Because my understanding is on the east side is going to be another softball field possibly. But even if it's 2 courts, you know, and I don't know the master plan, and I know these things take some time, but I wanted to begin the discussion of the possibility of bringing that there. Because I can't think of any better sport right now. If you want it to be used, I guarantee you it will be used. And I don't, and it's growing, and I don't see it going, being a fad and going away in a couple of years. It's just getting bigger. So if you're going to invest our money and our taxpayers' money, I think this is one of those that that's going to be around for a long time and be really, really well utilized. And, you know, these parks, if you can bring people together, especially across generations, right? Getting people of different ages out there and being active, if that's part of the goal, which I hope it is, I think this is a really worthwhile endeavor to do.
Gordon, do I remember right that it's maybe not ideal but acceptable to take a tennis court and divide it into four for pickleball as well?
Absolutely. No, it's Crown Park does that out in Camas. And people, yeah, people take whatever you can give them as far as pickleball goes. With that, you do have to have like a locker for portable nets.
Mm.
That's, and it's nice when it is just there and you can just go and play, but that's the one, you know, I guess caveat.
I read an article about pickleball saying it was the fastest growing sport in the country right now.
Yeah, believe it. I'm hearing more and more people do it as well. I keep thinking I should go try it out. I haven't.
It's harder than it looks, like golf. You know, you think, oh, that's going to be easy. It's a little harder than it looks.
The beauty of it is, though, there's people playing at every level.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, people are kind until you get up. They have a 1 through 5 ranking.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get up to the 4.0, they become a little snooty, but, you know, they only want to play with each other. But beyond that, everybody's really good to involve people and you know,
mm-hmm.
just really have community. And the community's really growing here. I want to say that they're just less than 1,000 people, part of their, the Columbia River, or what, no, I don't remember what it's called, but the Pickleball Association that's here.
Mm-hmm.
It's growing.
There are scheduled pickleball courts to go in at Curtin Creek, I believe.
Where is that? I'm not familiar with that.
119th and.
So it's up off 100. It's off 72nd and 119th.
Yeah.
And so I know there's a multi-use court going in there. I can't recall if that's more of a basketball multi-course or if it will have that. I'll have to double check. We're in final design right now for that. It'll be constructed in 23 or 24.
Well, very good. Thank you for your comments, Gordon. And yeah, it's definitely something we do need to keep on the radar.
I appreciate that. And if there's anything I can do as far as fundraising or trying to get my network or, you know, get sponsorships, if that helps to move things along. I'd appreciate any suggestions you can give me on what I can do to be proactive.
Yeah, I can say anytime you show up with money in hand or money possibilities, that greases the wheel a lot.
Okay.
And for PAB members, you know, what I communicated to Gordon was is that in that one location where he identified, there is an inline hockey court identified in the master plan. So again, we have to, before we could do anything at Pacific, we have to determine if that change would trigger any additional land use review, master plan updates. The other thing is looking at the future expansion in the parking lot, making sure that we have sufficient space for that additional use and understanding what that those vehicle spaces are going to be. And then once we've done that, then it comes down to dollars and cents and trying to find what our capital plan allows us to do. So I sort of just laid that out as sort of our process.
Indeed. Don, did you have something you want to say?
Yeah, just a few questions for Gordon. Is that all right, Rocky? Would this be the right time to ask?
Sure.
I had only heard about pickleball. I wasn't really sure. And Gordon, just a few questions for you. Is one, do you have any pickleball attire? I'd be interested to see what that looks like. Apparently, you've got to look the part. But on a more serious note, I think the picture that I saw, the Google Maps with the overlay of the courts on it that showed approximate dimensions and where you were suggesting they'd be built. How did you arrive at a 10 by 10 court area, or is it?
It's four by four.
Yeah,
so
I mean,
I had put only two where he has his cursor now. Then I went back on and took the measurements with. There's an app where you can take the picture and yeah. you can. And I and then I looked at what the dimensions of a pickleball court right. with the space, and because I had only put two in there, so my scale was way off.
Yeah, because the reason I ask is that's going to drive is that driving demand or is it vice versa, right? And if you build it, people will come, and then people come with their vehicles, spectators, and it doesn't really leave a lot of room for that. I just think that it's a great location, and we would just have to look at a more detailed analysis of how we were going to build that out. That's what I'm asking, I guess.
Absolutely. And it may be better to do four, to your point. It may be better to only do four or even do two. There are lots of considerations there. I just kind of did the max and
show
what was possible. Go ahead.
With a permanent pickleball court or dedicated court, it's okay to have a wire mesh net that would always be there. Does that meet the requirements for the competition and such?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot like, it's just like a tennis net. It's just a little shorter, not as long.
Okay. And then is the surface like a durable surface where it would be okay in this environment in the Pacific Northwest, or where did pickleball arrive from? I mean, where was it derived from? Just curious.
Just up in just south of Seattle is where it was created.
Oh yeah. Okay. So court would be durable, right?
Yeah. I would imagine whatever the time is frame to resurface tennis courts, probably every 10 to 15 years.
Yeah.
That would be a consideration. I know Hathaway Park, they actually raised the money from the community to resurface theirs.
Oh, yeah. Clipboard in hand, and you're out there on a Saturday. I mean, folks are going to sign up for something, and I'm sure, like you said, it's a way to bring folks together. And then I guess my final thing is on that point is there something in your mind where what would prohibit people from using the court? Is it the price of the equipment, the attire? Would it be just because of the competitive nature, you wouldn't be able to get a time slot in? Just curious on what your thoughts were.
The beauty of that, no attire necessary.
Really?
No specific attire necessary, truly. It you can get a paddle for a used paddle for $20. And then, what you'd probably want, depending on the community, people bring their own ball. But a lot of times they'll have their, so that's it. If you've got the court, there's nothing keeping from people from playing, and people play their own. They play their own level. There's some good apps out there. Schedule time.
Yeah.
It's not that you're reserving time, but you can say, hey, I'm going to be here. I'm this level. Who wants to play? And people go on and sign up. And if they don't want to play in that level, they don't.
Okay, like throwing your quarters underneath the bumper at a pool table.
I guess so.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Thanks for your information. It's very, very useful.
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate it. I need to get going, but thank you so much for your time. And please, Rocky, let's keep in touch and let me know what I can do.
Yes. Yeah. We'll have staff engaged with you.
Appreciate that. All right. Take care.
All right. Thank you.
Bye bye.
All righty, any other public comments? Seeing none. Move on to manager's report.
Thank you. For the record, Rocky Houston, division manager, parks and lands here in Public Works. I will turn this over and do a presentation a little differently so everyone can see my screen.
Mm-hmm.
Hoorah. All right. So to go forward, we have to look back, and we're getting close to approving our PROS plan. So I wanted to look back over from 2015 to 2021 and kind of look at some accomplishments that the parks, department division has accomplished. So since 2015, we've acquired almost 540 acres for Legacy Lands program. So we've conserved, made some big impacts out there. As you can see, kind of all over the county in our attainment areas, from east to north to south and everywhere in between. We've acquired almost 70 acres of parkland, all in the urban or the GCPD, the Greater Clark Park District area. So again, we've added, now I got to count them, seven. I think there's seven properties there that will be future parks that will develop. We have developed four, actually, 3.5 new parks, if you consider Lower Daybreak, that regional trail extension out there as a park development as well. So that'd be four parks that we've developed in the same time frame. And, you know, if it wasn't for COVID, we would have had another one constructed, Cozy Camp, but that is going out to construction soon. We've got Curtain Creek that's gone through the master plan, and now we're in the design phase. We've got Phillida going out to construction for that addition out there, and Hawkinson's got an addition. And then Harmony Sports Complex, and I guess it up there. We've got those turf fields that were developed in partnership with Harmony. Now I lost their name, but the group out there with the timber and the baseball. And then we are in design now to do about a $3.4 million project for the parking lot and safety improvements to get in and out of that, which is, per the Pros Plan, our number one used park in the survey. Yep. Planning, we did a master plan for Camp Hope, and of course we did Pros Plan. Looking forward for the Pros Plan that we have currently is that we've now got a hearing date set. It's going to be April 19th. That'll be 6 p.m. I believe. Once I get more information on that, I will get it out. At that, there will be a hearing with testimony. So if John, James, others want to provide testimony, this is a key opportunity. If it is moved forward, well, there'll be a resolution that'll get signed, and then we have got an extension already approved by RCO so that we'd be eligible for grants for this cycle that's currently open. But we'll get it straight up to them once it is adopted. And then in 2025, the County Comprehensive Plan will be updated based off of this information. So probably in late 23, early 2024, we'll work with the planning department, comprehensive planning, to identify if there's any amendments, any updates to the comp plan. There probably will be in section seven, which is the Growth Management Act. So the capital facilities planning elements for sure, and maybe some other areas. For recruitment, so we're making some progress on. We've got four open positions on the land side, and we've got offers pending or close to be pending or out. I think we've got one offer signed and approved for three positions. We had another person who resigned to he's moved on to a farm in Eastern Washington, so he's gone out to pasture, so to speak, pun intended. So we'll be hopefully getting that recruitment closed soon. On the park side, we've got four openings as well. We've got our program coordinator, which is sort of our asset and contracts, helps with our capital programs. So we'll be interviewing, I think, later this week. We've got our crew chief position due to retirement up for the North units. We're out currently right now recruiting that internally. And hopefully we'll have that resolved here in the next couple weeks. And then our office assistant three is recruiting. So that'll close on April 1st. And so hopefully we'll have interviews in early April and get going from there. And then our farm specialist, that position there for Heritage Farm is still open. We're still seeking some candidates there, and we're going to get that filled as soon as possible. So to just quickly go over some of these projects, very quickly, I don't have any names in here, so I apologize. But this first project was called Stanton Park. Now it's called Cozy Camp. This is out on Northeast 29th Avenue and Northeast 175th, sort of northeast of WSU's campus out there. And so this parcel, and the design is going to be pretty close to this conceptual here. The conceptual just looked prettier than the engineering drawings, but it's going to be a neighborhood park. It's going to have a loop trail that'll bring you up from Northeast 29th Avenue through the property and connect to the backside where it says Future 27th, the streets there. And then there'll be, like many of our neighborhood parks, there'll be a playground, a little multi-court, little half basketball court, some informal play, picnic areas, green space, it'll be irrigated. And then we have a wetland. This sort of falls off, as you can see here. So there's some wetland in here, so that'll be managed for those wetland species. So that'll get kicked off in May and should be completed by the end of October. Next project we have, is Phyllida. So Phyllida's been bouncing around as an idea for many years. I think emails I have go back, I think, to at least 2015. So this is an inclusive playground that when you come into the property, there's a little turnaround here on loading area. And then you come through, there's a bathroom and an existing playground that's over here. This is going to be a heart-shaped inclusive playground. There'll be a little rainbow that you'll walk through to come into it, and there'll be a little garden here. To the north, I'm just pointing out, is there's going to be a new senior housing development, and we're going to do a gate agreement to where there'll be a pedestrian access into our sidewalk system, as well as a emergency access for fire trucks will be added here. We're also looking at getting a stormwater easement where they can put their stormwater through our road system, underneath our road system, to connect in out at 122nd, I believe that is. In addition, there's a overflow parking lot that's part of this project. So this will add additional parking that'll come in off of 122nd, actually in off the park road, and provide that extra. As you guys probably already know, Phyllida has a couple soccer fields, natural surface soccer fields. It gets used quite a bit, as well as it's got a really nice shelter. So the parking lot can get full on those peak weekends, and this is to help with that. Yeah. And the last project I'll talk about this week is Hawkinson Meadows. So yeah. This is our new disc golf course. And that includes a 1 mile loop trail and a shelter and a pedestrian bridge. So it'll bring you from the existing playground and dog park area. It's to the north of that area. And so it'll allow you to cross over and be a separate little area with, I want to say this is 119th, Northeast 119th at the top of it, that it would connect to. Currently, this is a field, and this will get started on June 2nd and be done by the end of October. And Phyllida has a similar, it's May to October as well for the build season. So any questions on the projects?
They look great. It's really nice. Nice to see.
I can't remember the budget, so thanks for not asking that question. the last thing is, so as you guys all know, I tried to get out last week and meet with just about everybody. And I think I've got everyone at least scheduled, if not already met with everybody. So thanks for sharing your time. But one of those things that came out through that process was having some little mini trainings, some little updates. We have a robust program, lots of things going on, lots of things, and a few of you, most of you, are new to the board as well. So with that, my first training here, and I'll send this out to everyone as well, is just to kind of go over what the PROS plan is and the process that we took to kind of get to where we're at. So very shortly, the The PROS plan, or the Parks, Recreation, and Open Space plan, is a six-year strategic plan for our park system that reviews the recreational needs, completes an inventory of recreational assets, and now evaluates our level of service per identified standards to help inform and plan and the capital projects for the next 6 years. It also has a 20-year capital project projection, which is required through the Growth Management Act. So essentially, it's a snapshot in time where we reach out to the citizens, the residents, identify what the trends are out there for recreation, what the needs are, and put that together into trying to meet those needs through this six-year plan. Why do we complete it? Primary, so we can get feedback and engage with our residents in a formal way, so we can get those needs identified and those priorities. It's required per state law for the Growth Management Act, so we have to have that capital facilities plan component, as well as those, there are recreational elements of the comprehensive plan. And the Washington Recreation Conservation, or RCO, office requires that we have a PROS plan to be eligible for a few of their grant programs and be updated every 6 years. So it allows us to spend our money, access more money, and most importantly is meet those, that level of service and those needs for the users. So we're using it as a guiding document, as any strategic plan should be. It doesn't get dusty. We're always pulling it off and looking at it to look at those goals and objectives, make sure our programs are in alignment with those, look at our capital projects as we continue to update those, and identify recreational amenities. Like if pickleball or some became a unicycle pickleball thing, and that's a new recreation, again, allows us to try to meet those needs. The process we go through is there's a planning phase, which we start off with the data collection. So we hire consultants to do work. We look at other plans. We do surveys. So we really start to do that pre-work, and then we kick it off. So that's usually where the first public phase, where we're going out and getting open houses, getting that public information, doing one-on-ones, those strategic meetings to gather that information. Then we take all that information and we start to consolidate it, and themes start to come out, objectives, and we bring that back out to the public and to you to review and kind of make sure that what we've organized and the trajectory we're looking at and themes are consistent with what the public has said. You know, basically we're truthing it. Did we get what you said right? And then we draft the plan. Once we have a draft plan in place, then we come back formally to y'all to get a recommendation to move it forward to Clark County Council. At the same time, or just after, we go to the Planning Commission. Again, because there is that comp plan element, their focus is to advise Clark County on those things that could impact the comprehensive plan in the future. So they review it, they have a hearing, and make a recommendation to bring it forward to the council. Once we've gone through those two steps, then we go to the Clark County Council. Usually we have a work session where we talk about the plan in a little bit more detail. And then we have a hearing to get approval to adopt the plan. Once that's adopted, we bring it forward to the RCO office for them to review it and approve it. And once we've got all that done, then the county comprehensive plan, we look at any updates, and that these cycles are never on the same cycle. So it's like a Venn diagram where it's, I think the comp plan is now an 8-year cycle. It may go to a 10-year cycle. It changes. The PROS plan is a 6-year cycle per RCO. So again, we'll continue to work through those. So that's my training today. Do you have any questions on the material? Good.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'll just note for the new members that the this process of the PROS plan did not go as planned. And very much what we're putting forward to adoption is we'll call it a streamlined process at the end to just trying to get something adopted because the process really fell flat on its face over COVID and with previous efforts. So this is one of those ones where I personally am not happy with. Well, frankly, I can't say whether I'm happy with the plan itself. I don't know it well enough to even respond to it. But we've passed our timeline. We got to get it in there because it's money. So it's something that we'll probably want to bring back out in the future. The good news is it's based off the last plan. You know, it's an iterative process. And the last and original plan, the Parks Board was very heavily involved with, and it was a very well done process. So all is not bad.
Mm-hmm. John, you guys did a good job with what you had to work with.
There you go.
So can you give me an example of something that was pushed through and using the pros where, you know, from its infancy to eventually, you know, development and construction. Just curious.
Sure.
And what and how long did that take?
Well, Rocky, did you want to cover that or?
Go ahead, and I'll pick up any pieces or.
Yeah. Provide well, so normally, with a revision, let's say we redid park standards. That's, you know, instead of a acre for every 1,000 people, it's now 990 acres per 1,000 people. Had that been a change, it would normally be brought through to the Parks Board. We discuss it, we weigh the pros and cons, and move forward. This time, any such changes really haven't been weighed by the Parks Board. It's been done on the staff level.
Okay.
You know, and I think an example, trying to think of a, so our acquisitions of property are identified in the PROS plan. So in the 2015, we identified several areas within the PIF, and we acquired those through that. Otto Brown was one that we developed last year. So that was acquired before our previous PROS plan. But then through that GCPD funding, the PIF dollars, it allowed us to then have the authority essentially to continue to move that from that acquisition into development. The Hawkinson disc golf. So that was a project that was identified to be placed somewhere else in the previous PROS plan. So it was going to go out at Frenchman's Bar, but there was a conservation, a natural resource issue that was a constraint that kind of killed that location. So through the PROS plan identified this alternative site, and now we are going to construction for that. So those are some of those things. In this round, diversity inclusion elements are being incorporated into our scoring criteria for our capital project. So we have a different lens on how we're looking at and scoring those projects. So that, again, we're trying to be aware and engaging in those needs for it. Every plan, every process is not perfect. And I've seen where the worst plan implemented well does much better than the best plan not implemented well. And so it's all a balancing act to do it. And to John's thing is that it sat on the shelf as a draft for 8 months before we picked it up again because of transition of staffing to move forward. And COVID constricted some of the normal tools, you know, and I think before I got here, it appears that the staff had done a good job of trying to adapt as best we could. And the other thing that we'll be doing that's will be interesting in an experiment is we're moving to an annual capital programming. So this provides an opportunity for all of you to continue to engage annually on those priorities for our capitals programs versus every 6 years. So again, that's, I think it's a way to continue to make this, as John said, iterative. This will allow us to increase that. So those are those outcomes where the dollars get spent. So.
Okay.
All right. Any other comments on that? Nope, moving on. Let's, doesn't look like we hit, are you done with your report, Rocky, or is there,
yeah. Yes, sir. That's it.
Then no unfinished business. Let's move on to our perks maintenance management planning.
So you all received the agenda brief. Again, I'm going to try to move forward and utilize this as an item to help our residents, as well as you and I prepare my thoughts, as well as prepare questions. So this is an informational item. And so speaking to the PROS plan, in the PROS plan, goal 8, I want to say, is our operations. In there, we identified that we need to do some things. One of those is develop a maintenance management plan. What a maintenance management plan allows you to do is to look forward into resource allocation, identify what your FTE or full-time equivalent staffing needs are based off of a level of service, time it takes to do it, each of the tasks associated with that, and the number of things that you have. Why it's important is it's going to do a couple things for us. So one, it's going to allow us to take a look at where our FTE is, where our staffing levels are versus our maintenance level is, so that we can identify where those gaps are. And we either don't do some things or we try to get more staff somewhere to try to create some balance. The other thing is historically, we've sort of taken I call it a rear view mirror approach to looking at our sort of MMP stuff. So we look at what we spent last year, where our hours are spent, where they were spent, which is great. And it's a great truthing tool to determine where we actually are doing things, but doesn't really tell us what we should have been doing, what that level of service is. So we're just starting this process out right now. We hope to have it completed by the end of the calendar year, hopefully sooner for budgeting purposes. But what we've done so far is we developed just very roughly a level of service, not details, but just, you know, how frequency we're in there. Are we in there multiple times a day, once a week, once a year, sort of level 1 through 5, and had staff go through and just off a gut feeling identify this is a level 1. And this by each month, so January, February, all the way through, identifies it a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Now we're going to go through the process of actually identifying what those as a level 1 park is, the highest level, what tasks are getting accomplished and what that frequency is. And then we'll go back and look and see if our gut was accurate with what we said those tasks are, update that level of service, then incorporate our inventory of assets with prescribed allocation per line. To help with this, we've got 2 staff that were gone last week, actually, to a resource management school and came back, and one of their projects is to look at a park system. We're going to do this for the land side as well as for the park side, again, to kind of give us a clear picture. Some of those land activities for vegetation management is incorporated in a park, but we also do other properties besides our own park and legacy land properties. So again, I think it's a keen tool for us to provide the data that's needed to our policymakers and the public. And when we are making decisions to not do something or change things, that we're doing it very systematically so that we're having the best outcomes possible. Any questions?
No, it's a good plan and or good tool and long time coming. So I'm glad to see it moving forward.
It's the boring backside of the park side. You know, it's not boring, playing.
Very necessary.
Yeah.
Park shelter.
Park shelters. So we're looking to do shelter reservation season extension pilot it. So as you guys probably already know, is that our currently you can only reserve shelters or use shelters for by reservation from around Memorial Day, I want to say, through the end of September. And which is what the city of Vancouver had done, and we just sort of followed and adopted that, especially when we were back together and we all had a single sort of framework for doing things. Other places I've been, shelters are open every day of the year. They don't get used much in the off season, but again, it allows us to plan our work, to know when people are going to be out there, when because shelters create garbage. They create work for us. We have to make sure that they're ready. We got things mowed, make sure the electricity's turned on, all those little things so that people have a good time there. So what we're looking to try to do is extend the season by a month on either side to kind of do that. Anecdotally, in talking with people since I've been here, October is a busy month. And depending upon the weather, April and May can be busy months as well for shelters. And so our society is moving to where they want to be planful. They want to have those reservations, know that there's something. You know, you're not going to have Johnny's seventh grade graduation party. Do they even have those? I don't know. But, you know, they want to make sure that they have a place to go. They're not just going to show up. And as our population has blossomed, it's even difficult. Even though we have 29 shelters that are available, there's a lower and lower probability that you can just sort of show up and find something. And then it helps us, as I said before, kind of manage our staff and helps us winterize things a little bit better. So, and I did get the exhibit in there. Oh, good, good. So, as you can see through the parks, we're also looking. So some properties, like Vancouver Lake, the water table is such that we're going to have it sort of be one off there. So we have to just kind of see how the rain cycle is that year. So those will stay pretty much what they are now. But then the others, and we also even looked at maybe in Louisville having a few of those open in April as well. So the benefit is planned recreational activities, potentially a little just additional revenue to offset some of those costs. The use is already occurring there and help us manage our staffing levels appropriately. Any questions?
So you're going to kick it off and just try it at Louisville? Is that kind of the idea?
That's one thing, or we were looking at maybe adding an extra month in the beginning at Louisville for some of the pavilions, not all
right,
of them.
Right.
You know, part of this, I guess I do have questions here I'm supposed to ask you, which is, does that recommendation of that list look good? Any suggestions of changing that list or just do one park for the 2023, just Louisville?
What's the downside to doing all the parks and just say, hey, these things are open an extra month?
For this period, not much. We have seasonal staff on both ends of that to help offset any additional work. So there are, that wouldn't be too much of an issue there. If we extend it out into December into March, then we may have some capacity issues there if we were getting a lot of use.
Rocky, I didn't see the list of the parks where this was going to go into. But
would
I guess
like
my question.
Share my screen.
No. Okay. I think my comment will suffice to cover what I'm thinking is that are there in locations where we have a lot of reservable shelters, are we still holding one of those shelters as non-reservable?
No.
Here's why I ask is because in my experience, particularly with campgrounds that are reservable, we always have a site for admin purposes in the event that there's a mishap with our systems, and all of our systems as solid as we like to think. You know, Mary works on a Friday, she reserves it, and then Joe goes in on a Monday and there, oh, it's not reserved, it didn't take. And now we have a little bit of a flexibility in keeping the visitor still happy by having that first come first serve, or that admin site, if you will. I don't know if our sites have that capacity or not. And I just thought it would be something that we could think about if we needed to.
Well, that's a good thing. And I'll run that back through. I know, they get sold out so far in advance already that if we had them, just had some that were open, it might, create some people trying to come into the park at 5 a.m. or 4 a.m. You know, anecdotally, I was told that before we had a reservation system, people would actually spend the night out in front of one of the community centers so they could get in on that first day to make the reservations. So,
what a mess.
So
a lot of seventh grade graduations going on.
Yeah. Wow. You know, and the other thing that creates a problem for us and having reservation helps is that at Lewisville, we'll have a baptism, or we'll have a wedding, or other events that take up those parking stalls, and that creates a crisis. And so if we had an unexpected large group coming in because we had it open and we were already at capacity with everything else, it would create a use issue there.
Right.
And that we're already having that issue where, you know, people don't always tell you everything. You know, and they, oh no, there's only 25 people, you know, 175 show up. Weren't expecting everybody, but then where do those cars go? And once people get there, it's really tough. It's easier for us to, in the months leading up to it, to kind of walk the people through that and direct them somewhere else.
And then AC/DC shows up.
Exactly. Cover band. Yeah. You know, and the other, the other thing is, right now we allow you to make a reservation 12 months in advance, so you can be out there on July 4th and you can book the next July 4th. That's great. So we've got people who've been at the same place, same weekend, for 40 years. The flip side is now that other places I've been. So when I was at Oregon State Parks, they had a 9-month reservation window for camping and reservations. My last park system, we had 11 month. And the reason why those are there is to provide equity, to allow others to get into that same. So that's the other question is, should we look at that reservation period and keep it at 12 months? Or and look at changing that from an equity lens. We're going to get pushback from those people who are going to have to stand by the computer at 11:59, ready to hit the enter key to get the reservation.
Refresh. Yeah.
But
I don't know that I understand that. Why is it so much harder for somebody to jump in there at 12 months versus 11 months for the equity issue? I don't.
So, if I made a reservation, I can make this. I can. Again, go in there and take it again over. I can continue to take the same reservation over and over and over again.
I'm being dense on this, but all right, we'll just go with it.
I'm not doing a very good explanation, so it's sort of like first right of refusal. So you continue, hey, you want it again next year? Okay, let me book that for you.
Yeah, I'll say for past PAB boards, equity and allowing diversity has been a strong focus of this group in the past. I don't know about current group, but if there's a way to make things more open and available in general, we've gone there in the past.
Yeah. I think what Rocky has seen is that the fact that legacy folks who have always done that and been there before have a peculiar advantage to reserving it in the future. It's in their, you know, it's in their best interest. And if we change the reservation window, it allows a reset, if you will, of all interested parties to be able to go in there, a quasi lotto, if you will, a lottery. I think that's what allows more access. Because like you said, if I'm in there making my reservation for 4th of July, well, the 4th of July, while I'm at my party, I'm making sure that I've got my next year booked up.
But couldn't anybody else that did the same thing? Like, say all of us wanted to get 4th of July. What gives preference to the ones that already have it? I mean, why can I be there on 4th of July and get the reservation? I don't understand how they really have like a grandfathered in, they get it every year? Or they just happen to be there and so they ask for it that year? I don't understand.
The system and what day they got to file for it.
Pardon me?
They know the system and what day they need to apply for it, you know. And the average person says, "Oh, next, you know." But you're a day late and a dollar short because somebody's already on the already.
Well,
done.
I think that's just competition. I think that's, you know, how can you?
It comes competition either way. I think if there's a 30-day cooling off period, then that allows, you know, more people that opportunity because life happens and you may. You know, if it's that important to you, right, you're going to be able to try to figure out a way to game the system, no matter what we put in place. And for 2 years or longer, if we didn't change it, there would be a lot of very unhappy legacy users. Because, you know, I've done this at other places where we changed a group camp into individual sites, and they used to have their family reunions there. Really, all the only difference was is they had to make 12 reservations instead of one. They still had that same opportunity to get in there, but that sort of change, you know, any of those sort of changes like that create that there's always that opportunity that Aunt Mabel doesn't make her reservation, and so now they've got someone who's not part of, and this has happened, someone who's not part of the party camping in that group camp area. What was a group camp? And
like wedding crashers, right?
Exactly. Sometimes it's awesome and everyone has a great time, but you know, so you know, this is just something to think about. Again, no, you know, just for your chew on one, we'll take any feedback we get and come up with some recommendations at a future meeting for action items. You know, another one would be is, do we look at, since how they're so popular, looking at having some of the shelters are built to where they're already built to where you have two fire pits, you have two grills, two sinks, only a couple. Most of them are set up to be single use, and whether or not, again, other places we've divided some of those bigger shelters up into two so that we could get two customers' needs met. You know, if you've got a party of 50, but it holds 200, you know, we could have two parties of 50 in there still. And so that's the other thing is looking, should we look at that and open up? So instead of having 29, maybe we have 32 reservation or 37 reservation opportunities. Again, trying to get that opportunity out to more people. And should we consider having a couple shelters open year round? You know, I think it's only a couple parks where that makes sense, but is that something we should look at? And at a future meeting, we'll talk about fees, you know, our reservation fee and our special use fees. Maybe they're consistent with the market, maybe they're not. So again, that'll be in the future, another time. Right now, it's just what are the fatal flaws in this sort of pilot idea of extending the season, and should we look at other reservation periods associated with it?
Yeah,
I don't see any problem with extending the season. I think that's a good idea.
Okay. In the end, if we can make more money for parks,
I agree.
Yep.
I like to think about it as meeting more residents' recreational needs.
And we do that too.
Both. All right. Don't hear a lot more on that one. I think we're down to a roundtable discussion. Normally what we've done at this point is open up the floor to any board member who has something of interest or something they are concerned about or whatnot.
I guess I could mention to everybody now, if you want to drive Highway 30, old Highway 30 towards Multnomah Falls, are now instituting the reservation and a fee. So that'll be interesting to watch how that plays out. If you haven't visited Multnomah Falls with their current system of reservations, I recommend you just go on there and look at it. It's really quite simple. There was a lot of pushback on that. It costs you $1 really to run your credit card, not for nothing else. Simple, and they do somewhat monitor the use. And last time I was up there, it was on Labor Day weekend. Please hold your applause until the end, because that was a horrible weekend. But typically, that's the busiest weekend they have there in the entire year. And it was manageable. I even had my big old dog there, and it was fine. In past years, when I was there on busy weekends, forget about it, right? It's shoulder to shoulder, and despite COVID protocols, people are up in your face and doing this and that and trying to see the falls. But I think this is going to be interesting to watch how that plays out with Highway 30. And I think we are in a new era in terms of recreation. It's all about fees and paying to play, you know, whether it be nominal or whether it be overboard. That's to be determined, but this is the new way ahead.
Well, they're doing it in down by Sisters and Mount Jeff. You have to get a permit to do hikes, just to hike. Now, it's not talking overnight, like you need a permit, like in the enchantments to camp.
Right.
But day hiking, in this during the peak period, and then Dog Mountain on our side of the river, you have to, if you don't get there in the morning, you have to take a shuttle in the weekend or any day, take a shuttle in the summertime. So I agree this is how it's going to be. But I was reading the news release on this, and they said that if I understand it right, if you get there before 9 a.m., you don't need the permit. You can look for a spot.
That's good to know.
So it's between 9 and 5. And I also have a friend that is on a board. I don't know what board it is, but she is involved in that whole thing. And she was saying that the Department of Transportation in Oregon wants to get rid of that parking lot that's in the middle of the freeway altogether, because so they just want to get rid of it altogether, which will even so I think this is the big phase first to kind of get people used to not being able to find a parking spot, and that they say it's dangerous. It is dangerous, but
yeah.
Anyway, lots of things happening to keep an eye on. You're right.
Yeah, that's good.
All right. Well, I don't hear a lot else. Thank you for bringing that up. I think, unless somebody has any last minute item, we're adjourned, and we'll see you in a month.
Okay. Right. Thanks, team.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
See ya. Bye.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.